Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And as you know, we try to take Friday as a feedback Friday to take your feedback. And unfortunately, or actually fortunately, we've got we're going to have Tammy Young back with us. So what we're doing is we want to go through with a state legislature this process that Madison and Jefferson basically initiated at the state legislature in interposing upon the federal government. But what they did was they reached out, and this is why we're covering it, because we want candidates to actually start having this dialogue. And the reason this is so important is so that as we look at what's going to end up happening when the federal government pulls their shenanigans, if we have people that understand what to do, even though we can't get, you know, all of the states, we can't get the planets aligned, I believe that as long as there's somebody that will actually take that stand, I mean, we need people like Tammy Young to actually get up on that wall and actually basically defy the federal government and let everybody understand that they don't have the authority. They're not the parties to the compact. It is that type of, I'll just say, resistance. It's that type of authority that we need to start seeing in every single one of our legislators. I can't impress upon you. I mean, Tammy's not a sycophant. She's somebody that has been, you know, getting more and more active. She's got a lot on her plate. She has a very big family. And she realizes that this is something that needs to be done. And interestingly enough, you know, we see men, you know, in all. One thing I noticed that's unique about Wyoming is that the women are very active in their government, probably more so. As a matter of fact, I think in a lot of ways, the men just kind of sit back because maybe that's their form of entertainment. I don't know, but I do know this, that we need people like Tammy. We need champions of the Constitution on that wall. And so bottom line, we've asked Tammy to come back and actually continue going through the Kentucky, Virginia, and these resolutions and reports and these elucidations by Madison. And so what we're going to do is I'm actually going to bring her on here in just a second. And so we're going to dive back into the Virginia resolutions, or actually the Kentucky resolution. All right, folks, we actually have Tammy back with us. Tammy Young, how's the campaign going? Just a quick status update, maybe?
Well, it's hard to tell. I knock in a lot of doors, and I get really good reception.
Uh-huh.
We did have a town hall yesterday, and uh-huh. That's not a super strength of mine, so...
What, public speaking?
Right.
Okay. All right, so, I get
well,
it.
Well, you know, I have to make it up in knocking doors and in mailers and other stuff that I do.
Well, that's good. So when you lack in public speaking, or I should say when you know, get that kind of that 1,000-mile stare like a deer in the headlights, just remember that, you know, you're there to serve, and you know, it's the humility that is imbued by any person that is the most important thing that people kind of, you know, the people listening and watching, they see that. I mean, they see somebody that's arrogant and they see somebody that is, you know, humble, just, you know, I'm here to really, you know, help you understand why this is so important. Right? I mean, yeah. Just imagine, because we talked about in the last interview, we talked about Jonah. Just remember that when Moses had to go in to Egypt, he didn't have a lot of confidence in, you know, his ability to say what needed to be said. And, you know, you have to wonder why, because he knew Pharaoh. I mean, he grew up with these folks. He was a part of the inside crowd. I mean, if anybody could speak their language and understand speaking to them, but I guess coming in this different, you know, this different position and stature, you know, he just didn't have a lot of confidence. So, which is why God, you know, gave Aaron the gift to be able to speak for him or what have you. So my point is that you may not have somebody to speak for you. So this is something you have to do. But it always helps when you say, you know, give me a second because I'm not always trying to spin and I'm not used to, you know, trying to, you know, provide some type of, I'll just call it, you know, what do they call those things? Talking points.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Well, you know, I am going up against it.
Right, because you can actually applaud your opponent for being really good in creating sound bites and having all of these sound bites ready, because she's kind of been doing this as a lawyer. And as a matter of fact, you may want to point out, you know, the fact that, you know, that profession kind of trains the individual to use sound bites and so forth. But I'm here to, you know, give you the truth. And the truth is that many of the things that, you know, our government's doing, they don't have the authority. And and I'm not just saying that as a conspiracy theorist. Show me in our Constitution, and you can hold up your Wyoming. I talk about the state Constitution. Show me where we've delegated any authority for the state government to be involved in abortion. And while you're looking at it there, go ahead and look for abortion and the authority for the federal government to be involved in that. And then you can start placing context and say, you know, why would we waste time in trying to create a bill to regulate abortion when we shouldn't be involved in it? Period. If somebody wants to have an abortion, that's a different issue. If you want to outlaw abortion, that's a different issue. But why would we waste any time in trying to create a bill to regulate something we don't even have the authority to meddle with? It's not about whether abortion's a repugnant practice. It is. It's all about what powers have we given our legislatures, and they're messing with things that they have no business doing. And then you can look straight at your opponent, point your finger at her, and go, she wrote a bill trying to regulate abortion. You think that was a good application within our constitutional framework?
Are you saying that it can be outlawed but not regulated?
If you want the government to regulate it, if you want the government to outlaw it, we the people have to amend the Constitution to give them the power to play in that. And the fact is, right now, who pays for abortion? The majority of abortions are funded by the taxpayer.
Right.
We shouldn't even be funding it. See, that's my whole point, is you really just dive into this one issue. You can just, you know, point out how we're all being fleeced over things that they've assumed powers over that they don't have the power to do. I mean, it's one thing if you've got a doctor that's willing to perform abortion, but you shouldn't pay for it. And if we want to outlaw that, that's a different conversation. That means we have to talk about doing an amendment to the Constitution. But before we start doing those things, we really need to, you know, make some, you know, some probably more important fixes. But let's figure out first, do you want to let people continue to go into that state house and just play games with your money and play games with your liberties? Because that's what they're doing. They're deciding whether you're going to wear a mask or not. They're deciding whether they can apply, whether they want to apply the tyranny, because they can't. The Constitution doesn't let them apply these tyrannies. Whether it's the gas or the face mask, whether it's the vaccination, there's nothing in our state constitution that allows them to mandate vaccinations and those types of things. As a matter of fact, if you read the healthcare standards, Wyoming, we only talk about you have a right to choose for yourself.
Yeah.
That's it. So if you want an abortion, you find a doctor that's willing to give it to you, then you go pay for it. At this point in time, that's about as pragmatic as we should be getting on this. We should not, and we should actually be reeling in and getting rid of legislatures who are trying to create regulations for things not within that Constitution. And then, this is a perfect lead-in, you could turn right around and say, and I have to point out that the one bill that every legislature last year for the past 3 years was obligated to support due to their oath to the office that they would support and defend and obey the Constitution, that we presented a bill, the party presented a bill, demanding full compliance of the Constitution. And my opponent voted against it and tried to backpedal and has tried to spin, and I'm sure she's got great sound bites as to why she didn't do it. But that doesn't relieve the fact that she's legally obligated to support it, and she didn't, and therefore, in accordance with the Constitution, she should not be in office. And that's when jaws drop. And that's when people go, what are you talking about? And then you help them understand that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment clearly states that no person, while under the oath of office, who fails to support the Constitution, such as the bill we presented, this bill would have demanded full compliance of the Constitution. How is that not supporting the Constitution? How? Demanding compliance of the Constitution is the epitome of supporting the Constitution, and she voted against it. Are you understanding the huge difference here? Do you want people to play games and say, we can get you some jobs, but it's going to cost you money, but we're going to do these other things to you too, and play games when they don't have the authority to do these things? Or do you want to start cleaning up your government?
Yeah.
Those types of things, articulated in an honest and frank manner, will really help people understand the huge difference from the truth to the sales sound bites.
Because that's all they want to hear, the truth.
Well, you know, we talked about that. We talked about that. But once you start laying it out there, because bottom line, there are babies being killed in the state of Wyoming, and the taxpayers are funding it. And most of those people don't like that. Most of the people in your county are against abortion. And how would they feel if they could actually not have to pay for it? At least that's a win in their column.
Yeah.
Instead of somebody creating a regulation that we're going to make sure that these guys have some standards and we're going to regulate their standards. I mean, come on. That right there is compromising liberty. And in other words, that lawyer was complicit in actually supporting the killing of the babies. And if people place context to that one issue, that right there would actually out her. You know what I'm saying? Because they're Republicans, and they're against that. The majority of the Republicans, I should say, are against it, especially in Wyoming. God love Wyoming. I mean, I think that this is the opportunity is so great. It's just about having to have the conversations and make or connect the dots so you're making the sense to these people so they figure out that it's time they got government back into the framework of the Constitution. Because, again, if you get government into compliance of the Constitution, we will save we will solve 100% of your problems you have with government. 100%.
Well, there was a bill, 148, that was an abortion bill. It would have required ultrasounds, and I think it helped if the women did get an abortion, it would give them access to emergency care and a physician that was certified physician. Anyways, I think her reasoning for sponsoring that bill was because currently the bills that they passed last year are being challenged in court. And so she said, while we're waiting for those to be challenged, she presented this new bill.
Yeah, so I would basically say the bill that should probably be you know, come out is the quite frank bill that would say, or the maybe the Tammy Young bill. I'm just trying to be quite frank or curt, getting to the point that maybe there needs to be a bill that the taxpayers will not fund an abortion. It is not an entitlement, and it is not anything that has been delegated by the people to the state to actually pay for the services of that. They haven't even given us the authority to pay for any medical services. And the fact that we're already being strangle-held by the federal government in something that they don't have the authority to do, that's a different problem. But we should not be funding abortions in this state, period. If you want an abortion, that's a different story. But you shouldn't have to pay for the consequences of somebody else's mistake.
Right.
And it's the same thing with the idea of somebody actually getting you to pay for their college debt. It's one thing for a person to be able to go into bankruptcy court. But it's another thing to say, well, I can't pay for it, so you have to. No. You got to go into bankruptcy court, and you have to struggle for the next 7 years like everybody else. But the problem is that they don't allow that debt to be expunged. That's the word I've been looking for. They don't allow that debt to be expunged by bankruptcy. They say that that is one debt that you can't get rid of. And clearly, the Constitution demands, right there in Article 1, Section 8, that the federal government is to establish a uniform law in bankruptcy across the United States, which means that if you can't go into bankruptcy over debt, then nobody can go into bankruptcy. But if you can, then everybody should be able to go into bankruptcy over debt. Why is some debt not forgivable, but the rest of this debt for when it's the banks and when these, the homes, because there's collateral. Oh, well, then you can go into bankruptcy and they take your property and all of that. But in this, there's no tangible property, which is why this is a huge scheme. I'm telling you, the banks would not be paying for kids wasting money and being indoctrinated into socialism. They just wouldn't be doing it. But the taxpayers have been funding this, and this is why we have such a, such an illiterate and such a problem with the future generations is because of our education system. Anyway, I digress. I'm hoping this helps, but I'm hoping that you get some wind in your sails, and I'm hoping that these conversations with, especially in town hall meetings, I mean, I understand that you may not want to try to go and debate. But as a matter of fact, all you need to do is walk in the room and let's go, okay, let's debate whether something's constitutional or not. And then you can let health care, abortion, show me, here's the Constitution, show me in the Constitution where the state government or the federal government has the authority over these things, health care, abortion, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden people are going to go, hold on here, how do they create these laws? Well, because this is where you turn to the people and say, folks, look, as long as the Democrats and Republicans like this all agree that they'll compromise and pass a law that they don't have the authority to do, they'll write that law and pass it. And guess what? Because you don't hold them accountable to the Constitution and demand that they get, they be removed because they're violating the Constitution, then they're going to continually compromise everything you have, your property. I mean, if it exists, they will find a way to compromise it away from you.
Yeah, well, one of the questions they asked her was, how does she plan on supporting the mental health in Wyoming? And, I understand that that's not even an enumerated power that they have
right
authority to spend money on. And,
right.
But, she went on in deep
right
conversation
so,
about how she's funded that and how she supported the bill that will fund all of that.
Right. And this is where I think your best response had this been your response, it should have been, well, what should happen is, as a representative of the people, I need to come and talk to you. I should never write a bill and just do things and compromise this stuff away, because that's taking money away from you over something that I don't have the authority to do. And more importantly, we have to have a candid conversation. How do we do this, and what way do we do this? What's the way to do this? Because in the past, in America, over 100 years ago or 150 years ago, you know, some of this stuff was being taken care of. And it seems like as we've gotten more godless and more secular, most all of these things regarding compassionate services have only gotten worse.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where we have to have a candid conversation and actually put it on the table, what we can do and what we can't do. And as soon as we start understanding the Constitution, we're going to realize that we actually have, you know, a whole slew of opportunities of doing things that don't have to necessarily create a burden for the taxpayers. There's ways to do this, but this is where we actually have to sit down. But it's not about going in and writing something on a piece of paper and making an edict and making it so because two parties agreed to do it. That's repugnant to a self-governing system. We're a Republican
right, so
form.
That's a big topic in Wyoming right now. So if you, you know, if you're not for funding that, then you don't have a heart. You don't care about the people, right?
No. So if you're for supporting that, you know, some mechanism, why does it have to be funding via the tax, you know, via the taxpayer? Because
right. Yeah, because it can be funded in all kinds of other ways
through donations,
through fundraisers, through, you know.
Well, so there's that. But I'm going to tell you, who did it before? Who took care of the sick and the, you know, I'll just say the people that had mental problems? Who took care of that? The church, absolutely. And what has happened is because the church doesn't take care of. So look at the offerings. You know, look at the contributions that people pay the church. The more government takes from them, the less they give to the church. And if we actually stopped putting all of that money into the entitlements of everybody and let the church actually control this, there's no point in helping an alcoholic that doesn't want help. Giving them money only gives them more booze. You give that to the church to basically say you're going to basically take care of the drinking problem and the drug problem and so forth. And the pastors will walk into the homes and they will look and go, until you can sober up, we won't be giving you any money. And when you're ready for our help, we will be here with loving arms to help you.
Yeah, I know a church that does this.
Oh, well, and that's good. That's what we want. We want all churches to do this. Right? I mean, we want churches and communities to be involved. The problem is everybody just wants to pay. And you know what ends up happening is as we start moving money into a bureaucracy, the price goes up. I mean, yeah. If you give the government, as Milton Friedman said, if you gave the federal government the Sahara Desert to manage it, within 5 years, they would run out of sand.
Yeah.
And so my point is that when we give the government to do stuff, the money never goes to where it needs to be, to preserving or to assisting. It goes into bureaucracies. It goes into social services and education of social engineers. And it's just like it becomes this monster where at a church or community level, it stays streamlined because these people aren't making money off of this. They're really trying to get people to actually become a producer, a self-sufficient being in society.
Yeah, well, it goes towards $700,000 in a parade that they wanted to pay for, which luckily got voted down. And then it goes towards $2.5 million in a picnic.
Right. So let me stop there because we've got about 21 and a half minutes into this. And what I'd like to do is get into the Kentucky resolutions. Now, we started reading the 7th resolution, but we didn't get to finish it, and now we actually have enough time to finish it, and I think we can finish the Kentucky resolutions. So go ahead and get back in, if we could, if you wouldn't mind. You ready?
Yeah, so we're reading seven?
Seven, yes, correct.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Starting from the beginning, I'm assuming?
Yep, start it all over, yeah.
Resolve that the construction applied by the general government, as is evidenced by sundry of their proceedings, to those parts of the Constitution of the United States which delegate to Congress a power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imports, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, and to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the powers vested by the Constitution in the government of the United States, or in any department or officer thereof, goes to the destruction of all limits prescribed to their powers by the Constitution. That words meant by the instrument to be subsidiary only to the execution of limited powers ought not to be so construed as themselves to give unlimited powers, nor a part to be so taken as to destroy the whole residue of that instrument, that the proceedings of the general government under color of these articles will be fit and necessary, subject of revisal and correction, at a time of greater tranquility when those specified in the preceding resolutions call for immediate redress.
Right. Okay, so see that word right there? He's actually pointing out that they're calling for immediate redress. And so does that term sound familiar?
Yeah.
If you look in the Bill of Rights, the word redress is in the Bill of Rights, isn't it? It's in the First Amendment with the right of petitioning for the redress of grievances. In other words, what he's calling for is a redress of grievances. He's kind of gone through now the Constitution, and he's laid it all out and said, look, you cannot assume powers not granted, because if you can, then that would actually destroy the Constitution and the whole point of why we created a limited and defined government. And so now he goes into the next resolution. And this next resolution is where he actually turns the focus to the fellow states and calls upon the states to form committees of conference and correspondence and to actually start working with Kentucky. And he goes into some details here that I think are just really powerful. But this is where Thomas Jefferson is basically making the call. The first seven resolutions were like declarations that all of these four acts were violating these parts of the Constitution. They were violating the spirit and the letter of the law. And so go ahead and pick up with eight at this point.
Resolved, the Committee of Conference and Correspondence be appointed, who shall have in charge to communicate the preceding resolutions to the legislatures of the several states.
Okay, so right there, what he just called for was that, he says, resolved that a Committee of Conference and Correspondence be appointed. He's not just talking about his state, all states. In other words, that we all have to do this. Who shall have charge or shall have in charge to communicate the preceding resolutions to the legislatures of the, so each of them can now start communicating, and they'll basically be working, because instead of I honestly see what Jefferson was going to do was he was going to convene a convention, and This convention was not a convention that is a convention to amend the Constitution. As a matter of... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
As a matter of fact, in the Federalist Papers, let me see, do I have the Federalist Papers open before I go and try to open them? No, I don't. So let me open up the Federalist Papers, because if anyone looks in Federalist Paper number 49, what you'll find in Federalist Paper 49 is this reference to Thomas Jefferson's book on the state of Virginia. And in that book, he talks about conferences, or actually not just conferences. He actually talks about conventions and two types of conventions. So I've got it up. It's open. me get to 49. And again, the title for this, of Federalist 49 is Method of Guarding Against the Encroachments of Any One Department of Government by Appealing to the People Through a Convention. Okay? And so forgive me for diving into this, but I think this is apropos. Okay, so to the people of New York, the author of the, quote, Notes on the State of Virginia, close quote, quoted in the last paper, the Anti-Federalist paper, has subjoined to that work the draft of a constitution, which had been prepared in order to lay before a convention expected to be called in 1783 by the legislature for the establishment of a constitution for that commonwealth. The plan, so he's basically saying that they brought forward this draft or this draft of a constitution in 1783 for a state legislature, but and he doesn't dive into, you know, all of the details, but what happens in these first two paragraphs is very clear. He basically says the plan, like everything from the same pen, marks a turn of thinking original, comprehensive, and accurate, and is more worthy of attention as it equally displays a fervent attachment to Republican government as an enlightened view of the dangerous propensities against which it ought to be guarded. One of the precautions which he proposes, on which he appears ultimately to rely as a palladium to the weaker departments of power against the invasion of the stronger, is perhaps altogether his own, and as it immediately relates to the subject of their present inquiry, ought not to be overlooked. His proposition is, quote, that whenever any two of three branches of government shall concur in opinion, each by the voices of two-thirds of their whole number, that a convention is necessary for altering the Constitution or correcting the breaches of it, a convention shall be called for the purpose. Now, this was brought up, again, in the Federalist Papers because they were actually trying to lay this argument that they needed to call for a convention so that they could get the Bill of Rights and so forth. But what Madison is really pointing out is Thomas Jefferson was saying that there are two types of conventions. One is for the altering, like he says, is necessary for altering the Constitution, and then the other one is actually all capitalized, and it says, or correcting breaches of it. So, yeah. In other words, what we're talking about is, because Jefferson wrote that book, he's quoting Jefferson. And so Jefferson was basically following, you know, this line of thinking as, you know, he, this sage of the Declaration of Independence, he authored that book. As a matter of fact, if you've never heard, the Notes on the State of Virginia was one of the first literary successes in America. And he was the first literary success in America. And lots of people read that. And that's why they used that as citing material in the Federalist Papers or during that process. But anyway, back to this. He's basically laying out the, you know, how the states need to position themselves by creating these committees of correspondence so that they can start working and preparing to move into a convention to force the federal government into compliance. There was not going to be one application to Congress for the convening a convention to amend or rewrite the Constitution, in other words, a constitutional convention, but under the framework or under the title of something being constitutional, little c, this constitutional convention was going to deal with the violations of the Constitution so that the body, this convention, would say, look, here's all the evidence. You have no authority to do this, and ergo, this is what's going to happen. Because as we go through this, and this is why this is so important, the states being the parents, the states being the creator, and that the federal government being the creature of what they created, has the final and full authority to basically force the federal government into whatever position they needed. The one thing they didn't have was they didn't have the 14th Amendment. They didn't have in their favor a written language that actually says anybody that, while under oath, who fails to support the Constitution is in violation, must be removed. So in other words, they didn't have that. What they had was they had personal honor. And in those days, if you impugned a person's character, then they would either step down and or they would challenge you to a duel. But either way, they would be removed either. In other words, they would still be removed if they had violated their oath. And they would, it would be a huge shame. It would be a huge shame to them. But that's when men, you know, had a higher value for honor than their life itself. Anyway, okay, so go ahead and read the next, you know, the next few lines. When we get to the red, we'll point out that too. Go ahead.
Okay. To assure them that this Commonwealth continues in the same esteem of their friendship and union which it has manifested from that moment at which a common danger first suggested a common union, that it considers union for specified natural purposes, and particularly to those specified in their late federal compact, to be friendly to the peace, happiness, and prosperity of all the states.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead.
That faithful to that compact, according to the plain intent and meaning of which it was understood and acceded to by the several parties, it is sincerely anxious for its preservation, that it does also believe that to take from the states all the powers of self-government and transfer them to a general and consolidated government without regard to the special delegations and reservations solemnly agreed to in that compact is not for peace, happiness, or prosperity of these states.
That is right. So basically he's laying it out again and saying, who's the parties to it? We are. And so it is upon us. The burden is on us to actually make sure that we obtain that compliance. Remember that when they did these four acts, these acts were not within. These were the sedition and the alien acts that were not something that was in pursuant to the Constitution. Jefferson pointed all of those, how they were violating things in the Constitution. So when we look at Article 3 and the jurisdiction of the court, the court's tied. Its hands are tied. It's limited to all things arising under this Constitution. Those are the precise words, which means that sedition, or these terms of sedition, do not arise under this Constitution. This use of freedom of speech and the importation and the control of the importation of those people, those things did not arise. So it is an anathema. It is a complete perversion and nightmare of the Constitution to think that this issue would need to go to the Supreme Court. The issue needed to be presented to the body whole of the states in a convention. And I say this because in those days, that was the only mechanism. We don't need a convention. You can call it a convention, whatever you want, but this could all be done online. The states could easily meet virtually and actually start working together without having to go in. And, you know, it's not about figuring out what changes we need. It's about enforcing the Constitution. And so go ahead and now dive into the next part.
And that therefore this Commonwealth is determined, as it doubts not its co-states are, to submit to undelegated and consequently unlimited powers in no man or body of men on earth, that in cases of an abuse of the delegated powers, the members of the general government being chosen by the people, a change by the people would be the constitutional remedy, But where powers are assumed which have not been delegated, a nullification of the act is the rightful remedy. That every state has a natural right in cases not within the compact to nullify of their own authority all assumptions of power by others within their limits. That without this right, they would be under the dominion absolute and unlimited of whosoever might exercise this right of judgment for them. That nevertheless, this commonwealth, from motives of regard and respect for its co-states, has wished to communicate with them on the subject, that with them alone it is proper to communicate, they alone being parties to the compact and solely authorized to judge in the last resort of the powers exercised under it.
Okay, so right there, right there.
Okay.
Up above, he says, a nullification of the act is the rightful remedy. But he's not talking about the single state just nullifying it and ignoring it. He goes on and says that what you just covered, that with them alone, the states alone, it is proper to communicate, they alone being the parties to the compact and solely authorized to judge in the last resort the powers exercised under it. So in other words, that's why he's calling this conference, to get enough of the states, because the proper way to nullify something is to have the entity that created the law stand up and say, we had no authority to create this law. This authority is not in pursuant to the Constitution, and ergo, it will be null and void, and we are striking it and removing it. It's the same thing with when they created the Department of Interior. They had no authority to create the Department of Interior. So what has to happen is the states have to communicate with a directive in telling the federal government, or I should say in telling Congress, not all of government, because Congress is the responsible for this. Congress is the one that created the acts that created these things. And so Congress has to basically be, you know, in this directive, they'll be told you had no authority to do this, and ergo, you will communicate the following. That we, as a body representative of the parties, were never delegated the authority to create the Department of Interior. We are nullifying the department and all of its acts, and it will, and then in that directive, they will provide a clear and concise way to orderly dispose of the department. In other words, you don't just go in there and kick everybody out and turn the lights off in one day. You can't do that. As a matter of fact, to be honest, right, if anybody's ever been fired, that's not a fun process. And as a matter of fact, everybody that's working in the federal government really believes they've got a legitimate job when they don't. And so we have to actually, you know, look at this, and I'm not the king, but it is my recommendation that the states provide a timeline where they stop the funding. And they basically turn off all of the current, you know, contracts and engagements and everything else, so that they're no longer funding that. And that the state would then come in and start working with key people and identifying who those key people are to start capturing all of their documentation, all their emails, everything, so that it can all go into an archive. And then slowly, you know, the least necessary people, let them go with 2 weeks notice or whatever. And then slowly but surely, over a 6-month time, you know, get everybody gone and out, if, you know, if that's possible. But what we want to do is we want to do this orderly, so that, one, we can capture everything. And the reason we need to do that is because down the road, justice must be served. If there are people that have committed crimes or have done things under the guise of the authority of the government, then they need to be brought to justice. I'm not against that. I'm not here to do that, but I'm just saying we have to capture, because what they do is they like to destroy their evidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they like to bleach, bleach bit, I believe, is the application, something like that, where they go out and bleach the drives and destroy all the data. So the point is that we want to make sure in these directives that we just don't turn the lights off and scuttle everything. What we want to do is we want to make sure that, you know, we slowly and methodically let those people who are less important go first, and those people that are, you know, willing to cooperate or at least work with, you know, those I'll call them marshals or whatever we send in there from the states. These will be state folks that'll come in, and they will have access to ensuring that they're going to get the keys to the, you know, the domain, the system, and all those things. I mean, every department, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Housing, the Department of Labor, all of these departments that are unconstitutional need to be shuttered. They need to be basically decommissioned and disbanded, but that can't happen just like that. As much as people want to see that happen that way, you can't do that because we lose everything. I mean, shoot, there'll be a fire burning in D.C. when we're done, and we don't want that. Now,
yeah,
you know what I mean? And so here's the other thing. As we start realizing that we live in an age of technology, do we really need Washington, D.C. for anything other than formal affairs? In other words, why do we have our representatives live for 2 years away from us when they could easily be working in our home state and in our county, and, you know, either working at the county seat or maybe at the state legislature, whatever's kind of closest for them, but they should be far more available to us. And as a matter of fact, this limitation on how many, you know, legislators we can actually have represent us, that goes away too. We can actually have our proper representation. And anybody that knows anything, when you look at senators and representatives, for every committee, they have a staff. I mean, each congressperson employs lots of people, and these are the permanent residents of D.C., and they basically all go and do his work and kind of tell him what he's doing and so forth. And sometimes they don't. But nevertheless, all that goes away. Because they won't be doing those committees anymore. We won't need those people anymore. And as a matter of fact, Congress, I should say the House of Representatives, will probably go back to being a real part-time job. Like it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There we go. So anyway, okay, so back to, I went down a rat hole there. And so, you know, we can go back to, but I'd like to pause here because we still have a long part of Resolution 8. It's a good probably page left. And so let's pick that up in our next call in a couple of days, probably next week sometime, if that's okay with you. And we'll just keep, you know, the yellow is the highlighted ending part. And is this helping?
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I'm just going to go back and listen to it. And
okay. God bless you for stepping in and doing what needs to be done. We need everybody. It doesn't matter where you are in the skills and your understanding. If you recognize that they shouldn't be doing it, then all you have to do is start learning how to articulate they don't have the authority to do it, because that would become the standard mantra. As we hear, oh, well, we got to be, you know, compassionate, or we got to be diversified, you know, sustainable. No, we got to be compliant. Mm-hmm. There you go. We need to change the language to be what it should be and not what they want it to be. And so anyway, God bless you. Thank you so much for coming on. Any other saved rounds or parting shots?
Nope.
Then thank you so much, and good luck. And folks, I still need to get that funding information up on the website. So send me the stuff that I need to get up there, and we will talk to you in our next interview. Thank you so much. God bless. So what we're going to do when we come back on Monday was we're going to kind of do the Feedback Friday. What I'd like to cover is some of these issues that we're actually looking at regarding the Secret Service. I mean, it's been my position, and I truly believe that the Secret Service should not be an autonomous entity. Why do we actually have all of the manpower management and all of those types of things, you know, all of these separate houses? These are silos. In government speak, these are silos. This should actually be underneath the Department of Defense. Anything for national security, it should be under national defense. And anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about the RNC. We're going to talk about the DNC, but the Uniparty and how people don't realize. They get all caught up in the glamour and the glitz and everything else. And I'm sorry to tell you this, folks, but we're being manipulated. We've been manipulated. They've been manipulating us for a long time. And so what we want to do is we want to kind of clear the air, but moving forward, we're going to hopefully get a few more candidates. And actually, I need to get back to the ratification debates and some of these other issues, because the Constitution Day is coming up and the reading of the Constitution. So we're kind of falling a little bit behind on the content. So what we'll do on Monday is, again, Feedback Friday. We'll actually try to cover, you know, some of the live or some of the opinions. And by the way, hit us up. If there's something you want us to cover for Feedback Friday that we didn't get to cover, so we'll cover it on Monday, send us an email. It's info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. Go to our contact page. All the information is there. You can even just call and leave a message, and we can either call you back, or we can just take your message and try to respond in kind. What we're hoping to do is we're actually hoping to develop a process where you can start preparing yourself and other people in your county to start leading. We have a self-governing system, folks. And if we're going to be self-governing, we have to demand compliance to the Constitution. So if we're going to do that, then we need to understand the Constitution, and then we actually need to hold ourselves and those others in service. If we're actually in service, we need to start holding each other accountable to the Constitution. So as we start leaning forward, as we start, you know, going into closer and closer to the election time or the election day, then we hope to actually provide you with more content to help you start developing your strategy for the next election. I can't tell you how many times it's disappointing when I tell people, we need to start planning now. You need to start planning now for that next election. You know, you didn't plan already. Now's the time to do it. Or quit complaining. And I believe everybody that is tuning in and everybody that's spending time and trying to learn, listening to the show and learning about the Constitution, I believe you're the ones that are at least attuned to what needs to be done. So why don't you do it? What does it take? What is it going to take to finally get people to take, you know, to take the courage to adult up? I'll just say adult up and stand up and start doing what needs to be done. So I hope you start recognizing that, you know, I don't want to be saying I told you so. Again, we've got a lot of stuff and we're running out of time. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.